Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Hi, I'm Jacob Heilbrunn, editor of The National Interest, and my guest today is Dan Rundy, who's author of the book, The American Imperative, Reclaiming Global Leadership Through Soft Power. Even more importantly, Dan has a new piece that we have just published this morning called How President Trump Can Bring Peace to Moldova. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jacob. I'm thrilled to be on the show. I love The National Interest, and it's my preferred platform, and you've been such a great partner to me. So thanks for having me on.
So Dan, you visited Transnistria in September, a pro-Russian enclave. You were very familiar with Moldova, and you announced this morning that the only person who can solve Moldova's frozen conflict is President Donald Trump, a proven peacemaker who can link peace with business opportunities in the Moldova-Transnistria conflict. Tell us what Trump can do.
Thanks, Jacob. Just a little bit of background for your listeners. So the National Interest has been very generous in having me post several things about Moldova. I've been to Moldova about 6 times. It's a country the size of Maryland. Transnistria is about the size of Fauquier County, Virginia. And so Moldova's got about 3 million people, Masamenos, and Transnistria's got about 300,000 people, Masamenos. Moldova was originally part of, it speaks Romanian, and was contested over by the Ottomans, by the Austro-Hungarian Empire, by the czars in Russia, and then it was part of Greater Romania between the two world wars, and then was taken back by the Soviet Union and was annexed as one of the Soviet socialist republics for 50 years. When the Soviet Union fell apart, there was a piece of Moldova called Transnistria, which had a lot of Russian-speaking people. There were specific policies to bring Russian speakers from other parts of the Soviet Union to what was called Come to Sunny Moldova. There was actually a campaign. And so you had lots of folks who were Russian speakers who were afraid that Moldova was going to rejoin Romania. And so these folks did not want to join Romania. They wanted to speak Russian, or they wanted some kind of a different kind of identity, or they weren't sure. And so there was a conflict, and the Russians chose sides of this group of these Russian speakers in Transnistria. And it's been what would be described as a frozen conflict. And so it's a weird enclave that almost nobody recognizes. There's 1,500 peacekeeping troops from Russia that are not welcome on the territory of Moldova. Tiraspol, the capital of Transnistria, is about an hour and 15 minute drive from Chisinau. So it's like not that far. It's sort of like driving to Baltimore or something like that. Think of it like that for your listeners. If you're in
Washington.
From Washington. Yeah. Sorry for my DC centric bias. Please excuse me.
You are have become a true Beltway denizen, it appears.
I'm such a Beltway denizen talking like that. Please excuse me. But I would just say that it's just around the corner. They block radio stations from Chisinau, which is the capital of Moldova. They have they pipe in, all the Sputnik radio, which I guess is like one of the big time radio stations in Russia. So there's a nostalgia for the Soviet Union. There's lots of symbols of the hammer and sickle, which Jacob, you and I are old enough to remember the hammer and sickle in the Soviet Union. So there's some, I'm going to call it some Soviet nostalgia. but it's kind of a private enterprise, sort of a semi-private enterprise, kind of a enclave. It's got a handful of very wealthy oligarchs, one in particular, you know, basically it's almost a company town or company enclave by this one business group. And this one business group owns a very prominent soccer team that's like European league quality with a world-class stadium. I went to the stadium they've got a metal, I think they own a metallurgical plant that needs some sprucing up, and they've got an electricity plant that needs some fixing up. They own a lot of things in the enclave. Several things have, so you have this frozen conflict since 1992. You have folks who speak Russian, who are kind of Soviet Union nostalgic, aren't sure what they want. You then have the most of the Moldovans who the lingua franca in much of Moldova, not all of it, is Romanian. And you have a Western-oriented government led by Maya Sandu, sort of the Rocky Balboa of European politics. This is one.
Now,
is
that's tough. A good line. Let's like talk that? About Maya Sandu for a second, because there were just elections on Sunday in Moldova that
Correct.
Russia was massively trying to interfere with and apparently failed.
And so absolutely. So that's why I published this piece. And that's why this piece is so timely in the national interest about why President Trump can bring peace is so. There are a series of planets over the last 11 years that have begun to align in this frozen conflict. The first was the beginnings of a partial invasion of Ukraine in eastern Ukraine. This meant, I think up until 2014, there were elements of Ukrainian society who participated through connivance and corruption in allowing Transnistria. If you look at a map, there's Moldova, there's a thin strip of Transnistria, and then there's Ukraine. And sort of southern Transnistria, if I can put it that way, to Odessa ain't that far away. Maybe it's an hour and a half, maybe it's a 2-hour drive. So most, and a lot of the economy of Transnistria up until then was sort of in the contraband business of various forms. And so the border was sealed after 2014 by the Ukrainians. So for 20 plus years, there was this very porous border that was over because the Ukrainians now saw the Transnistrians as a military and security threat because the Russians on the ground in Transnistria, and also because there's an enormous weapons depot from the Soviet Union in Transnistria, an enormous weapons depot. So first they kind of got blocked by the Ukrainians in 2014. The second thing that happened is related to this, is you had the full-scale invasion in 2022 of Ukraine. Meant that at some point President Zelensky was going to like stop allowing for gas to be from Russia to be transported on Ukrainian territory. So there was a contract that was through December 31st of 2024. And President Zelensky said, I'm ending that contract when the contract ends. So gas that powered a rickety power plant for electricity in Moldova is going to end its gas supply was ended on December 31st, 2024. That Transnistria and this power plant have had to get gas on more expensive terms in some more roundabout way, and they've had to deal with the Moldovans for that too, to get the gas. The Moldovans got a gas divorce from the Russians in 2022, saying like, this is terrible. So Maya Sandu was elected in 2019. She grew up in Moldova, went to the Kennedy School at Harvard. Don't hold it against her. She worked at the World Bank as a technocrat. She became a minister of education and was seen as sort of the most popular minister of education at the time. A friend of mine who is at the International Republican Institute, Steve Nix, did a poll and found that the most popular person in that government was Maya Sandu, the minister of education. He's like, I gotta go meet this person. He met the minister. And he said, Madam Minister, you're the most popular person in this government. Have you thought about running for office? And she said, oh, no, Mr. Nix, I'm a technocrat. And the next day she called him back, said, you know, I've been thinking about our conversation. I'd like to run for office. Can you help me? So the International Republican Institute and a number of other institutions helped Maya Sandu. She quit her job at some point, lived off her savings from the World Bank job for 2 years. To start a political party. This was after a lot of unhappiness with sort of the existing political class. There have been a series of scandals in Moldova. And so basically she was entrusted because the entire political class was sort of considered like too corrupt or too Russia leaning or whatever. And so this woman who is sort of the Rocky Balboa of European politics, like she's come from nowhere. She's sacrificed and sacrificed. She's given up everything for the Moldovan cause. She became president maybe 4 or 5 years ago. She ran again last year and tied her reelection to a referendum on, do you want to join the European Union, which barely passed. And then she had a parliamentary elections on Sunday, and she had an absolute majority in the parliament. And it was not a clear, whether it was clear whether she would get an absolute majority or working majority. And the voters came back and gave her a working or an absolute majority and an ability to govern. So she has the presidency and she has the parliament. So that means her hand is strengthened for hard things and tricky things like a peace deal with Transnistria. And it also creates a clear path for the kinds of reforms that are going to be needed for Moldova to join the European Union. I've always said, Jacob, you need sort of three basic things for Moldova to kind of go along the path of, say, Estonia. What we want is Moldova to be a sunnier version of Estonia with better food. Not that Estonia doesn't have good food, but it's like slightly bigger version of like a sunnier version of Estonia, like with prosperity and good food and good wine and, you know, and have kind of that kind of an economy. So it's not as wealthy. It's like 4 or 5 times not as wealthy as Estonia. Like it should converge with, it should like follow the path of Estonia. So it needs to do three things. It needs a gas divorce from the Russians. It needs an electricity divorce from Transnistria because most of their electricity's come from Transnistria. And it needed a clear path to join the EU.
Now, Maya Sandu is an example of somebody who's done an amazing job and is being recognized more and more. But what do you think Vladimir Putin is contemplating right now? He has invested considerable effort in trying to detach Moldova from any Western or European Union orientation. Is he just going to take this election result lying down?
Take his ball and go home? I think that's a really, really good question. And I would just say something else, Jacob. Like, if you look in the last 5 or 6 years, the Russians, at least when they do like election interference or kind of play games, like they've had some successes. They're pretty good at being bad, right? They intervened and did stuff in Georgia. They're quite able. I don't like them. I don't subscribe to what they're doing, but they're clever. So they're good at disinformation. They're good at getting money into people's hands to try and flip votes. They're good at, you know, creating, sowing confusion because their leverage has been around electricity and gas. So the gas, the easy leverage, Jacob, has been gas. That the cheap, sort of free gas went away both in Moldova and Transnistria over the last 2.5 years, 3 years. The sort of free electricity is also going away because up until now, because of the history of the country, all the electricity power lines into Moldova came from Transnistria. There were no power lines to Romania. There were no power, you know, and so as of Thanksgiving or no later than Christmas 2025, Jacob, so 8 weeks from today, or no more than 8 weeks from today, is it 8 weeks? Yeah. Or sorry, let's say 10 weeks from today, the first of 3 electricity power lines will be built from Romania to Moldova. The second one will be built in 2027, and the third one will be built in 2031. But all you need is one. And so they'll have a full-on electricity divorce from Transnistria. So you're having the gas divorce. Now you're about to have the electricity divorce. And because Maya Sandu is so compelling, her story so compelling, and she's such a compelling political leader, she is a donor darling in Europe. 8 weeks ago, the leaders of France, Germany, and Poland all showed up. She also hosted sometime in the last 18 months, some sort of Council of Europe or one of these big groups. Don't hold me to it if it's the Council of Europe, but some big time jamboree of European leaders. And there were like 30 of them all showed up in Moldova. No way would they have showed up for some kind of sketchy leader in the past. Most Moldova's had been cursed with a lot of not very competent leaders or corrupt leaders or Russia curious leaders. She has been clearly Western leaning. And so this is their chance. The gas divorce has happened. The electricity divorce is about to happen. This vote strengthened her hand. She has an absolute majority for 4 more years. She got in a referendum passed last year saying yes, by the skin of her, you know, her teeth, got this thing passed. But they passed it saying, yes, we want to join the European Union. The European Union has opened a clear path for her to join by 2030. The negotiations will end by 2028. Joining the EU is important. For American listeners, what I've said is, like, what would you do to join the coolest fraternity or the coolest sorority in college? What hazing would you put up with? For a country like Ukraine or a country like Moldova, it's like joining the coolest fraternity, the coolest sorority in college. But it's more than that, Jacob. It's about joining the EU, for American audience, it's about cash, cred, and connectivity. Joining the EU plugs you into a system. That's what happened to the Baltic states. That's what happened to Ireland. That's what happened to Poland. That's what happened to Spain. It will create all sorts of Western-focused energy and hard infrastructure and digital infrastructure. And it'll align Moldova with standards and rule of law systems that would be recognized to your listeners as part of the West.
Everything that is anathema to Vladimir Putin.
You got it. You got it. He hates this stuff. So I think it's an interesting question. What will he do? His easy leverage, which is gas, has gone away. His electricity has gone away. And his shot, he tried in this last year's election and in this year's election to kind of to fiddle with it. And they threw a lot of money. They supported a number of political parties to kind of sow confusion, and she still won. So it's sort of like I said, she's like the Rocky Balboa, like they've thrown everything at her and she's just kept training and kept showing up and just, you know, kept her eyes on the prize. She is the Rocky Balboa of European politics. This woman's a phenom. And she's consecrated her life to the Moldovan cause. It's a very special person. And so I think he's got limited options. So he can say, okay, well, I'm going to try and create some conflict in Transnistria. This is to the point of my piece about, like, there's a chance for peace, but they don't really have that many troops. And there's a lot of there's a significant military presence on the Ukrainian side that just kind of keeps a watchful eye on this. And there's 1500 troops in Transnistria. And I'm going to argue there's multiples of that of Russian troops. And there's multiples of that on the Ukrainian side. So all to say, with a clear path to the EU, a gas divorce, an electricity divorce, this powerful election, and the election of President Trump. President Trump has now done, Jacob, I don't know how many peace, you know, is working on all these peace deals in the last 6 months. One of them was Armenia and Azerbaijan, which your listeners will know share borders with Russia. So there's no reason why President Trump couldn't involve himself in the Moldova-Transnistria conflict. Now, why should the United States care about the Moldova-Transnistria conflict? Super obscure, hard to spell, trying to use the other alternative spelling of Pre-Dinistrovi. I Googled it and it came up predestination in Google. Like, you can't even get it Google to come up easily to come up with it. Super obscure for a Western audience, certainly a US audience. Like, why should we care about this? Well, we should care about this for several reasons. One is that if you want to have a reconstruction of Ukraine, all the roads have to kind of go around Transnistria. So it's like extra cost and extra time. Second, there's a power plant in Transnistria that needs some sprucing up. And if you had a, you know, peace between Transnistria and Moldova, you could put that power plant to work to power the reconstruction of Ukraine. There's a metallurgical plant that also needs some sprucing up and could use some investors. Again, if you had, say, American investors in the power plant and American investors in the metallurgical plant, and you had some kind of a deal, something probably around language. I mean, one of the issues is, like, can we speak Russian? And the answer is, I think, yes. There's probably a few other things. But I think if I'm Transnistria's oligarch, he's getting older and his son's going to inherit the business. He lives in Germany. This is the other thing. Does he want to be a part of, like, an EU country that's going to get wealthy? Or does he want to be part of some kind of broken enclave? Oh, and by the way, Transnistria's exports of agricultural goods, 80% now go to EU. So they're facing, whether they like it or not, the European Union and Transnistria. Wouldn't they want to be a part of that process and benefit? I mean, Moldova's got all sorts of plans, and the European Union's going to throw tens of billions of dollars to connect Moldova to the West. And so Transnistria should be a part of that. But the other thing is, if you want to have a minerals deal in Ukraine, you need electricity to pull the rocks out of the ground. That power plant could do that. You're going to need roads that go through Transnistria or rail that goes through Transnistria to transport mineral products or finished metals from Ukraine into the West through Moldova. It's going to be one of the transit points for the reconstruction. And Moldova is going to be a platform for rebuilding much of southwestern Ukraine, as well as a center of energy. And there's going to be a symbiotic relationship on energy between southwestern Ukraine, including Odessa and Moldova and potentially Transnistria. So all that to say, like, this is an obscure conflict in a somewhat times forgotten corner of Europe. Supposedly it's the least visited country in Europe by tourists. The country's got great weather, great people. The food is good. I went to Transnistria. I've been to about 100 countries, Jacob. I was nervous. I left my cell phone. I left my watch. And I was afraid. I was a little nervous. I wasn't sure what to expect. Maybe almost afraid. But it was sort of a pantomime customs process. And I showed him my passport. And I went in and I traveled with a guide. I purposely hired somebody to take me around. And and it was fine. And then I think my presence was known. And so there were, I'm going to say, semi-official folks came and visited with me in a semi-official way to say hello and greet me. And they were very friendly. They would like more tourism in Transnistria. So all that to say that things have changed in Transnistria. The final thing I'll say, Jacob, if you look at this election on Sunday, 30% of the Transnistrian voters, because Transnistrians can vote in Moldova because they're technically part of Moldova, voted for Maia Sandu's Western-focused party. So that says to me that there's a new generation of people who would like to see a different future for Transnistria. They don't want to join the Soviet Union or join Russia or be an independent country. They'd like to be a part of something. So I think if they made a deal, I think the number could go higher than 30%. And I think you could, if you brought along the oligarch who controls a lot of the country, you have to bring him along and you have to bring some of the voters along and make them an offer. But I think President Trump is the sort of person who could think outside the box and put together, I think a lot of it's going to have to do with trade and investment and specific investments in some of these assets that I was describing to you.
Well, Dan, this may be an obscure topic, but you have shed much light on it. And we will have to see what happens in the coming months and have you come back on the show and we'll discuss it further.
Thanks, Jacob. Watch this space. We could have having the Mar-a-Lago Accords for the Transnistria-Moldova frozen conflict.
You will have been at the forefront of the push for it.
Okay, thanks, Jacob.
Thanks, Dan.
I'm so grateful.